All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. We're discussing Christian Javier, the no-hitter, combined no-hitter. We have a fun question coming up in a little bit. Combined no-hitter versus the Yankees in New York, or a complete game no-hitter versus anyone else? We'll get to that in just a bit. 713-780-ESPN. What do you do with Overeasy once he's back to the big club? 713-780-3776. Now you're looking at a six-man rotation. A lot of folks don't, or Justin Verlander, I should say, doesn't love the idea of the six-man. He wants to pitch every fifth day. I think for the time being, and look, this is what I said the previous segment. Like, if you want to give Overeasy some starts in July to see what you got, to showcase him for other teams, I'm cool with that. Once you get to August 2nd and you're looking at a five-man rotation, if that is the plan, then it's Overeasy that needs to go to the bullpen based on the information we have right now. So I'm good with like a hybrid six-man where like Justin Verlander's going every fifth day because he wants to, and then you're moving around the other guys. We've seen Javier get an extra day or two because of that. We've seen Fromber get an extra day because of that. Other pitchers, of course, have to fall in line with that as well. So if that's what I have to live with for 6 weeks, I'm all right with doing it that way.
No, I, you know what? That's what we said prior to him getting hurt, that until he kind of got hot, the first thing that you're trying to do is at least get people from other teams to pay attention to where there are so many teams that are in desperate need of starting pitching that somebody should be willing to give you something, anything at this point, to basically make an offer for Jake Odorizzi. And that includes an Angels team that if they weren't in your division, but yet they could still continue to suck enough that they'd really never scare you, that you could say, hey, no matter who's interested, if I've got multiple suitors and I could get something of decent value in return, that's a massive win for my team. Because I've got a guy that has already proven and said, and you know, and one thing I will say as a caveat to this that I wasn't aware of previous, he's a good teammate. Most of the guys in the locker room say they really, that I've heard from, say they really enjoy him being around. He's been working with McCullers. So I guess he's a good teammate, which I wasn't aware of. But from the standpoint of being a good player for your manager and your organization, he's the first guy that said, I don't want to go to the bullpen. Then when he went to the bullpen, he had all kinds of issues with how he got ready, how long it took him to get ready, how long it would take him to go back out there once he pitched. And he basically made a stink about the fact that he's never done it before in his career and he really wasn't in the mood to start now. So if that's the case, no matter how good a teammate you are, you're basically telling us we have no choice. We need a guy that can do what we need him to do. If you're not that guy, then we'll find someone who is.
Go be a good teammate by being the long guy in the bullpen.
Yep.
Show how good a teammate you are by doing that, and then exercise your opt-out because you have a player option for next season if you want to go be a starter elsewhere. In fact, that's kind of the perfect scenario for me that I want to see. But if you want to give him a start, like three or four starts in July to showcase him to other teams, I would be okay doing that. Now, to defend Overeasy for a little bit, he has been a lot better this year. Once he got off, he had three bad starts.
Until he got hurt, he was really on a roll.
And he was nails. He was nails until he was carted off with that rolled ankle there at Fenway Park. But last year was also his first year coming off of Tommy John. And by all accounts, that you're much better your second year than your first year. So, I mean, Odorizzi's not chopped liver like we once thought. I mean, we were talking about Jake, or at least I was talking about it, Jake Overeasy saying, make his life miserable so he doesn't pick up that player option for next year. I still don't want him to pick up his player option
for next
year.
Up, like what, torture and other
things? Whatever you got to do. Yeah. Whatever you got to do to make Jake Odorizzi not an Astro going forward, because I don't want to be on the hook for that, which I still don't want to be on the hook for that salary next year. Would you rather have Jake Odorizzi on this team next season at $12 million, or would you rather use those $12 million to find the very best reliever that you can for $12 million on one
year?
That's
the point I was going to make earlier when we were talking about this, like the Javier situation. There's a reason why starting pitchers are so much more valuable and get so much bigger salaries than bullpen guys, especially long relief guys, because of the massive value when they're effective in Javier being where he needs to be. He's a starter. You know what? If that means more financially for him down the road, so be it. But guess what? There's more value as you're running your team on a day-to-day basis from putting him where he belongs in the starting rotation and finding someone else to soak up innings for you in long relief situations.
You got to prioritize Christian Javier. He's too good of a pitcher not to make him a priority on the 2022 Astros.
Does this change, by the way, your philosophy then about would you trade him if to get your guy.
Well, I didn't say yes to that. I said I need 6 weeks to determine. Okay. I wouldn't trade Luis Garcia or Christian Javier for a rental bat. I would. It just starting pitchers are A, too valuable, and then B, they're under club control for the next couple of years. Like, I mean, first base is a problem, is an area that I do want to address. I'm hoping it's before August 2nd. But if it's not before August 2nd, it's definitely going to be in the offseason. But it does not, for me, need to come at the expense of Javier or Luis Garcia. 713-780-ESPN. What do you do with Over Easy when he comes back? What do you do with this playoff rotation? We'll get our ideas in just a second. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Big C, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Big C?
Happy Monday, boys.
Happy What's up, Monday.
Man? Okay, Over Easy. Yeah, he needs to be gone by the trade deadline. Like you said, showcase him, show him out to a couple of people. You need to trade him for an actual long reliever because, as we've all seen last year, putting him in the pen is a bad idea because he's going to act and whine and cry and moan and not act like the great teammate like some people call him. So I will go and find a long reliever, and I will actually find a closer. And my playoff starting rotation as of today will be Verlander, Garcia, Framber, Javier, and
Garcia.
I don't know what we're going to get with McCullers. I can't even put McCullers in there because we don't know what we're going to get.
Well, you're not going to get argument from me because I've told all of you guys that my biggest thing is until he's back, I'm not expecting him back. I don't expect him back all season long. If he does, it's an added bonus. How long he stays would be another thing that I'd be concerned about. But I'm not counting on Lance McCullers. I'm counting on the team that's going to battle every single game right now and then what needs to be done and what areas need to be focused on to make them better so they have the best chance to win World Series. And I'm sorry, I just don't see Lance McCullers in that plan right now.
I look at Lance McCullers as you need to wait for new information. Like, if you're having a conversation of the playoff rotation right this second, Lance McCullers is not in my four-man playoff rotation right now. But if he pitches, let's say, six games down the stretch before the postseason and he looks like Lance McCullers did last year in the playoffs, that's going to change
sure.
what my playoff rotation is going to look like.
But the other thing, Jeremy, you don't want to be in a situation where that changes your philosophy for the short term. He goes out and has a couple of good starts, and then we go through what we went through last year where all of a sudden now you're starting to count on him. Now you're starting to say he's going to be a part of my playoff run, and then all of a sudden something rears its head injury-wise, and you go, well, now
right.
what do we do?
But I don't think you're really looking at the pitching staff as being influenced by Lance McCullers. Because we don't think Lance McCullers, you and I think we're on the same page that we see him back best case scenario by August. And I think it's probably more mid-August than early August, right? So, like, anything you're doing before the August 2nd trade deadline, I don't think is going to be influenced by Lance McCullers, or at least the idea that McCullers is
but
back.
I will say from a click perspective, you've got to have a pretty clear understanding of what you're going to need and what you're going after. If you see a couple of starts from McCullers and you still have to make the evaluation, no matter what I see from him, do I feel like he's going to be good to go from now through the end of the season, whenever that is, and be able to be a guy for me? If he's not, or a starter for me. If he's not, then I got to go get the help I need because there's only one deadline, and I've got to pay attention to every asset of this team that needs help.
I don't think that the timeline is going to allow you to do that. Because
right now it's going to be very tight.
Because if McCullers makes his first start, let's just say best case scenario, August 5th. The deadline was August
2nd. But as it relates to that, then, is you can't sit there and say, we were just talking about trading Odorizzi. You might not be able to, or even if you wanted to, trade Odorizzi, and you might have to keep all these guys around, even if it's like on the taxi squad, because of the fact that you have to have insurance. You don't know if and or when his arm is going to give out again, or if he's going to be able to take on whatever load that you're asked him to take on from now to the end of the playoffs.
Sure, but don't you think the pitching staff's already kind of set? Like, unless, like, do you think
I don't think the bullpen is. I really
don't. Well, but you don't think Lance McCullers is a reliever, though.
So, like, I don't, but some people are going, you know, we have people texting us, too, saying he's going to be the closer. No, he's not.
So we got to define now what we expect Lance McCullers to be, because I know that you want to add a reliever, which, okay, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but, like, if you're relying on Lance McCullers to be part of this rotation, like, what's the alternative? You're not trading
for
Chris
Sale.
Remember,
he even went out there and said, when people were saying he's not a relief, but he does not want to be a relief. He's like Jake Odorizzi. Yeah. He wants to be a starter.
But whenever you look at this playoff rotation, we'll get into it in just a second, 713-780-ESPN. In fact, we might talk about it next segment. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line. USMC Rowe is in the Hive of the Killer Bees. Thank you for your service, and thanks for being a listener to the Killer Bees.
Hi, thank you, guys. No problem, anytime. Just love this country. Hey, so
I want to talk about the Astros and the Yankees, or mainly the fans, because one of my best friends from middle school, he moved down from Connecticut, and I guess there are Yankees fans up there. And I commented on Facebook after the no-hit, I said, F the Yankees. And he said, why are you so salty? I said, me salty? Dude, Altuve has been owning y'all after the cheating scandal came out, and y'all still boo him. He's here signing kids baseball fans, and y'all say F Altuve every single time. Every single time. And I'm salty? I just wanted to get that off my chest. Thank you. Have a great day.
Altuve did own the Yankees, didn't he?
No, he really did. I mean, look, the enjoyment that I found every single time they started the F Altuve chant, that he could not get enough of making them just eat it every single time, from leadoff home runs to home runs and extra base hits to multi-hit games. He did everything and more to basically get them to shut. At the end, they were starting to applaud him, I think, his last couple at bats.
Did they? No way.
Yeah, no, I think even Blummer made some that they weren't doing the F Altuves anymore. They were actually somewhat kind of cheering a little bit because he had abused them for four straight games. Whatever the case, this is a different Altuve than when he was shook the first time back there.
Oh, yeah.
And now you see him. And I think a lot of it, too, goes back to, Jeremy, something that I don't think the Astros really wanted him to do. But even being mic'd up and from a national perspective, to see not only is he a great dude, but the way he just kind of deflected when they said you're getting ready to go to New York and all these fans are going to say all these things. And he's like, oh, they're just passionate fans. They're going to be who they are. It's great. You know, he didn't probably really feel that, but the fact that he came across so positively too, that was a step not only for him, but I think in terms of it was the whole team as they go into that hostile environment. He couldn't have handled it better, and it was awesome to see.
The fact that you have fans that go up there and ask for his autograph before the game during BP are the same fans that are, you know, saying,
screaming it, yep,
saying something before Altuve, and it's not Jose. It's a four-letter word, but it's not Jose. Shows the contradiction of Yankee fans. Yankee fans are the absolute worst. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, when we come back, let's define our playoff rotation if the playoffs were starting tomorrow. Also, do you take a combined no-hitter at Yankee Stadium or just a normal no-hitter against like a division rival, something like that? Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we've been teasing it for a while. What would your playoff rotation be if the playoffs started tomorrow? 0446 said, playoff rotation is fairly simple from an outsider. He put Guardians fans in quotation. Are Cleveland fans now saying that they are Guardian fans? Is that a thing? 713-780-3776?
Have to be, aren't you?
I guess. Anyways, he says,
I think Washington fans are now Commanders fans.
Really? Do you identify yourself as a Commander, or do you identify yourself as a Guardian if you're in either Cleveland or the nation's capital?
I think you have to.
All right. Anyways, the Guardians fan, thank you for listening to the Killer Bees. He says playoff rotation is fairly simple from an outsider looking in. Verlander, Valdez, Javier, and then if needed, Urquidy as your number four. I agree
three
with the top three.
Yep,
the top
too.
Three for me, Justin Verlander, Fromber, and Javi. At this moment, look, Lance McCullers is going to have to show both of us what he has before you're giving him a start in October, before you're giving him a start in the playoffs. To me, it's unanimous for the top three. It's JV, it's Fromber, it's Javi. Get rid of this whole bullpen notion with Javier. He needs to be a starting pitcher. And then the number four comes down to Urquidy, Luis Garcia, and then whatever you see from Lance McCullers, I suppose. I wouldn't even argue with Urquidy, to be honest with you. His last three starts, he's been nailed since he got rid of the cutter.
But I think of the two, I have more confidence and been there and done well on it, the big stage of what Garcia can do
Urquidy
for you.
Urquidy has, though, as well. Urquidy's had some big World Series starts.
Right. He hasn't been bad, per se. I just think that, and though his fastball velocity has been up, too. I was going to say otherwise his velocity might be a little lower than Garcia's, but lately his fastball velocity's been up, too. Look, it's a great problem to have from the standpoint of trying to weed it all out. You have options that I don't think any other team in baseball really has. You know, the Mets, they have big ifs at the top. They could be in that kind of predicament if they get both Scherzer and DeGrom healthy again. That's a big if.
Right.
And then you got a Carrasco who's had some pretty significant injuries in the past. You don't know what he's going to be. But, you know, tell me the other staffs in baseball that wouldn't love to have the problem of having seven legit major league starters. You got to whittle it down to four. I agree with you. I'd go with the top three being exactly that, Verlander, Fromber, and Javier.
Uh-huh.
And then if I have to go with a fourth, I lean a little bit more towards Garcia than I do Urquidy, because when Urquidy misses, he misses right sitting dead center in the middle of the plate.
That's where our hang-up's at, because I'll be honest with you, I'm torn on the number four. Like, if I had to pick right now, who do I have more faith in, Jose Urquidy or Luis Garcia? Urquidy, I mean, you look at his last three starts, and he pitched really well yesterday, carried another no-hitter late into that game. It was unlucky for him that the bullpen didn't close the deal, because he deserved a victory in that game. Since he got rid of his cutter, three starts since then, 19 innings, he's got a 2.37 ERA. Like, he's pitched really well. Like, it's Urquidy or Garcia, I think, for that number four. And if you want to weigh in, Hive, you can. 713-780-ESPN. Who would you trust more in a playoff start right now, Urquidy or Garcia?
There's no wrong answer, but the problem is the ramifications based on that, right? Because depending on the guy that you don't choose, are they going to be effective in another role for you?
Yeah.
Urquidy's been out of the pen before.
Yeah, see, what's weird about that is Urquidy has more experience out of the bullpen in the postseason, things like that. But Luis Garcia might be better suited for it.
He's
got more power.
He does, but again, when you start getting a starter that's always been a starter and starting to ask him to get warmed up real quick.
Yeah, you're unsure how he's going
right.
to be. Now, let's keep in mind 2017 with what the Astros did with McCullers and Morton, where they were stacking their starts. One day it was McCullers, the next day, well, actually it was Morton, McCullers in the ALCS, and then it was McCullers, Morton in the World Series.
Well, it's so like we thought we had to option. Do with Odorizzi a year ago, where it was
yep.
always Odorizzi, Javier, and one would pitch five, the other pitch, you'd try to pitch four, whatever, and then until you could get to the back of your bullpen. You don't want to have to be in that situation. You want a guy, too, that's also going to be able to give you, be more available than just once every third day. Or maybe fourth day. You need a guy, again, because your arm is stretched out and conditioned to be a starting pitcher. How many guys are going to be able to make the transition to be a guy that pitches two games in 3 days?
Right, yeah. So, like, the stacking model might not be a bad idea there either. You have Urquidy for, you know, until, or Garcia, whichever one you want to start, until it's like, okay, they need to be picked up, and then you go the other route. So, we're pretty unanimous with JV, Fromber, Javi.
Yeah.
713-780-3776 if you disagree. We're torn on Urquidy, Garcia. Now, the factor that we haven't talked about is Lance McCullers. What would Lance McCullers need to do to jump either Urquidy or Garcia, whichever side you're arguing for? Here we're arguing each side of that. What would Lance McCullers need to prove to you, show to you, with X amount of starts, however many starts he gets, to where you trust him more than an Urquidy or a Garcia?
You know, to me, we had said that we want to see him pitch a half dozen times or so in terms of McCullers, right? You're asking,
what do you need to see from Lance McCullers? However many starts it is, however many appearances it is.
So that's where I was going
with this.
So we see him six times.
Starter.
We see him six times, okay. Right? So as we see at least three or four of those times where he gets into the sixth inning, where he has no limitations in terms of velocity and or how many breaking pitches he throws, and he has at least three or four of those in which they're a quality start. Or in the neighborhood of a quality start, if you don't want him to go into the seventh inning. If he gives you six innings, three runs or less, throwing all of his array of pitches, and his velocity is to where it was before he got this injury, I'd start to feel pretty good that he's settling into a groove, and he hasn't had the wear and tear of all those innings in a regular season to worry about, where I'd start thinking about, okay, this is a guy that maybe I can trust. Because more so than anything else, it's those six or seven starts, too, to see that arm is going to hold up.
And also how deep he can go into games, things like that, too. I think we both agree that Lance McCullers is going to have to prove himself worthy of one of those starts because of the rest of the pitching staff. Like, if this was a staff that was getting hammered and they were a very mediocre staff and you didn't have confidence with, you know, three starters like the Astros do, then you would just throw in Lance McCullers. But the fact that you have so many quality starting pitchers, Lance McCullers is going to have to earn it. He's going to have to earn a start in the playoffs. 713-780-3776, our HRNP listener line. 3106, Keith in Beaumont says, you pitch Jake a max of two times in July, and if he doesn't make it to at least a quality start, you move him to the bullpen or trade him as a package deal. He's not going to love the bullpen idea. I would love for him to show that he is a good teammate and that he would settle into a long relief role. Because, like, I don't think that a long relief role is valuable in the sense of winning games. Where it's valuable is in the sense of saving the arms in the bullpen. That way you're not using high leverage.
Yeah, it's not high leverage at all. It's just either mopping up one way or the other.
And they're saving high leverage guys from mop-up duty. That's where a long reliever's value truly is. As far as trading Jake Odorizzi, I'm not sure the trade value that Odorizzi has. Like, would a team that's in playoff contention that desperately needs starting pitching, would they be interested in Jake? I think to an extent. The fact that he's making $12 million next year if he decides to stay with that team, that's a pretty heavy value for mediocre to above average starting pitcher. And then also on top of that, I don't think you're going to get much in return for Jake Odorizzi. So it'd be more valuable just kind of keeping him around, which is something that you would have to ask yourself and is something that James Blake's going to have to ask himself.
And I think as much as we've played around with the idea a little bit, you're not going to have to do much to motivate him to exercise his option to become a free agent. If you just tell him, hey, look, you're not in the cards for next year as a starting pitcher for us. We know that that's something that you're very against in terms of going to the bullpen. If it means you have to go elsewhere, we're sorry about that. We love having you around, but we also know you have to do what's best for you. But just be honest with him in the fact that you've seen it, we've seen it. Whether Lance is back or not, the guys that we have are fully capable of being starters in a five-man rotation. We got no spot for you.
8745, if Lance McCullers Jr. does come back this year, have him in the pen to pitch one or two innings in relief until 2022 to get fully ramped up. This is something, who told us this? Keith Law, I think, told us this. And then Keith Law, like, tweeted it, retweeted out some content, and then basically somebody responded that Lance McCullers is a starter, not a reliever, and then Lance McCullers liked that tweet, which is a pretty huge piece of evidence that Lance McCullers isn't going to be too fond of that idea. I think you can make the bullpen thing work with Lance McCullers if he's on board, and it would also have to be a set schedule. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world until to get him fully ramped up, and he showed us that he can be valuable in a relief role whenever he did it back in 2017. But you have to, one, win over Lance McCullers with that idea, and then two, to your point, because you talk about, like, the bounce back and, you know, relievers, like, what is difficult for them is you don't know when you're going to pitch. You might pitch Monday, then you might be needed Wednesday. Some days you may have to go back-to-back days. Lance McCullers coming off the strain, I guess, of the UCL, he's going to have a pretty set schedule. You can do it out of the bullpen, but it becomes more challenging, and especially in the playoffs.
He's taking a roster spot, too, right, for a guy that's limited in terms of when you can use him and how you can use him. And so then I ask the question of you, would you rather have Lance McCullers, no matter how he's used or in that kind of situation, is that Lance McCullers better than no Lance McCullers at all?
Yes.
Because I don't know if we're ever going to get Lance McCullers from a pitching perspective to be as effective as he was when he got hurt. So I don't know that I'm going to put a guy that's going to be limited in terms of when you can use him, what he can do when you are using him, and how often you use him. And then I don't know what kind of stuff he's going to be able to have, especially you're asking him to do something that, one, he didn't want to do, that he's really never done in his career.
Now, the rosters expand in September, so you add two extra pieces to the roster.
Playoff,
but playoffs, you have to bring it back down to 26, and we're hoping that McCullers is back before September. But I would ask you, would you rather have Lance McCullers as opposed to Brian Abreu on the pitching staff? And I'd rather have Lance McCullers over Seth Martinez. So I think the answer to the question of can you live with Lance McCullers being on the roster? I think it's a pretty hard yes.
Yep.
I think you can live with Lance McCullers. 9-7-2-3 playoff rotation will be Verlander, Valdez, Javier, and Urquidy. Garcia could be the long relief guy to replace Javier in the pen. LMJ would have to go 80 pitches every outing and be consistent to earn a playoff start. We were talking about, can't have a bad game and a short start and be trusted to start in a playoff over Urquidy or Garcia in the back end. JT, I think we're pretty similar.
We also added to that to get more in depth. The velocity has to be at or about at where he was before, and he's got to be able to throw his curveballs. There can't be any restrictions on his repertoire of what he's going to throw when he's out there.
Now, he did add the slider a lot more than the curveball last year, so breaking ball in general, I think, is fair to say. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, coming up next, combined no-hitter for the against the Yankees in New York at Yankee Stadium at the house that Alex Rodriguez built, or would you rather have a complete game no-hitter against anyone else? We'll kick it around. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.
talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Would you rather have a combined no-hitter against the Yankees in the Bronx in the house that Alex Rodriguez built, or would you rather have a complete game no-hitter against anyone else? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
I think that matters.
How many what?
How many pitches on the one no-hitter by one guy against any other team?
Because now you're talking about long-term health?
I know that we're ramping up the pitchers with more pitches per start these days. I start to get a little uneasy when we start getting over the 110 number threshold with these guys.
Jake Peavy was on MLB Network talking
about how good too.
Well, I haven't seen much of him. I only saw a clip where he said that he would have left Javier in the game.
Oh, that's stupid.
Okay.
No, but I think he's really good. They do Jake's hot tweets
really? Cuz
he has so many different opinions.
I don't get MLB Network.
And then he backs them up. And the other night, you know, to the flip side of that one.
Yeah.
He said his hot tweet was, for all you Yankee fans that already think that they're not only the best team in baseball, that they've got a ticket punch to the World Series, slow down. The Astros might be the best team in the American League. That I love that. He saw what we saw this weekend to realize this isn't a one-team race in the American League. And if that's your American League Championship Series, that's one hell of a series that could be must-see TV.
Killer Bees have been trying to tell you that for a month.
Yes, we have.
713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's on your mind, Chris?
Hey, guys. Love the Astros talk. First of all, I just wanted to say it really impressed me how the boys came back from that devastating loss, to win Friday and Saturday. I mean, thank goodness we had the stopper pitching for us Friday night. That helped out a lot. But, I mean, that was a heartbreaker, you know. I mean, it's just to see it melt away like that. So credit to the boys for staying focused for Friday. But I don't know if you guys talked about in the first hour. I missed the show. Apologize. But yesterday when Dusty was asked about walking Judge yesterday, you know, I guess that would put the bases loaded. He was talking about he was worried, guys, about walking Rizzo, about what a great walker Rizzo is.
Yeah.
I mean, I just cannot believe that was his thought process. Well, Rizzo, you know, he's just great at the plate, and he might walk in the winning run. You know, I wanted to hear what you guys had to say.
Appreciate the call, Chris.
I don't think it was a great response at all, and I think that, in my opinion, I would have done it 10 times out of 10. And it's the same way when we talked about it the other night that mm-hmm. I would have put him on. Especially with the situation and what was needed, I absolutely would have taken my chances because I know Dusty's not analytical. But it didn't take much to see that as much as you want to give credit over his career of Rizzo being a good hitter, a contact hitter, a guy that can hit for power and for average, when you look at what he's done in the series and then over the last couple of weeks leading into the series, he has not been great, he has not been good, and anytime you give me the opportunity, do I want to face him or do I want to face Judge, I'm going to face Rizzo every single time.
Yeah, see, to Chris's first point about the bounce back on Friday after the Astros lost a heartbreaker on Thursday, to me that's a sign of a good team. Like bad teams let that tears them apart. Like a loss like that on Thursday, they lose three or four in a row. They lose five or six in a row. They lose 7 out of 10. So the fact that the Astros were able to bounce back, win that game, then win again on Saturday and should have won the game yesterday, I think is a sign of a good team, which to Chris's point is promising. Now, a little bit later,
it could have been devastating, by the way, if they had lost again after losing that game the way
they
did.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, it starts to snowball, and bad teams allow that to snowball, and the Astros didn't. And then they beat Gerrit Cole because of Christian Javier as well on Saturday. As far as the Dusty point, like, I think Blankers and I, we both have one area watching this series of where we think that the Astros could use help or just, like, it's kind of the life of the way it's going to be for the rest of the season. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But mine's the manager. Mine's the fact that you have Dusty Baker. And, like, we're going to disagree with managers and people, well, let Dusty, he's won 2,000 games, do his job, blah, 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 blah. I would say that that's incredibly boring. And what's the point of watching baseball if you aren't going to add your own input? But to me, it's more the response that he gives and the reason that he gives as opposed to not doing it. Like on Thursday, it was Aaron Judge with a 3-0 count, runner at first and second. And the idea, well, you know, just let him on.
I don't want to be Tony La Russa.
Right. I don't want to be Tony. You'd be calling me Tony La Russa there. No, I didn't think about it. So, like, there's times whenever I'll disagree with a manager or a managerial decision, and not that they'll talk me out of my point of view, but they give me an answer where it's like, oh, okay, I can see that. I don't hate it. You know what I mean?
Right, that I wasn't thinking that way, but yeah. I can see your point of view.
I don't disagree, but that makes me dislike it less. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday, whenever he was asked about pitching to Aaron Judge in that spot, because you had runners at first and second, there was two outs in the inning in the 10th, and the idea, like you mentioned, was, oh, well, you know, he said – the fact that they asked Dusty, like, what did you you know, did you think about it? He goes, no, I didn't think about it because you got Rizzo on deck. Rizzo's been a really good hitter for a very long time. I don't care what Anthony Rizzo was doing the last 5 or 6 years. I care what Anthony Rizzo's doing right now in 2022 and what
That's
Aaron
not the first
Judge
time
is
he's
doing.
Done that either. Remember that?
What's that?
When they ask him why you didn't walk a guy or something like that, it was the first baseman for the Royals, Encarnacion. And they're like, you know, why did you not pitch to Encarnacion instead and walk so and so? And he's like, Encarnacion's been a great hitter his whole career. Last year and a half, 2 years, he's been garbage.
Like, and then Dusty would go on to say, like, because some of the points that he did mention I think are valid. Like, loading the bases in that spot is valid because now a walk, a hit by pitch does win the game. A pitch that gets away from Castro does win the game. So, like, those things are valid. Like, I understand what Dusty's saying here. But whenever you weigh it all, Anthony Rizzo did not have a hit in the entire series. Did he have a few walks? Yeah, he had a few walks. But you also need to have faith in your pitcher that he's going to have the ability to throw strikes. Like, who would you rather face? Like, just, it's simple to me. Because a lot of people, like, I saw people posting stats, well, Anthony Rizzo has higher numbers with runners in scoring position than Aaron Judge. You know that I believe in the keep it simple, stupid mantra. Who would you rather face with the game on the line? Aaron Judge in 2022 or Rizzo in 2022?
I get the fact that Yordan's having a hell of a year. He's the best hitter right now in baseball. Now, for the month of June and everything else, I know for Astros fans' sake, you want to put Yordan in that, but you're not facing Yordan. He's on your team. So take Yordan out of the equation. He's the best overall hitter this year in the game. I would rather face anybody else. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I think it's a simple question. Like, well, runners in scoring position, Rizzo's better than Judge. Well, who would you rather face with a game on the line, Aaron Judge or Anthony Rizzo? You tell me your answer. And, like, Seth Martinez is a righty. His best pitch is a slider. You're giving that away with a lefty. I don't care. I'd rather face Anthony Rizzo than Aaron Judge with a game on the line.
And he already got you once. I was going to say, he already got you once. So you think, well, I learned my lesson. Okay, let me try and buck the odds here. I went with facing him the first time. That didn't work out so well. Now let me try the other philosophy. Let's put him on and try somebody else beating us. There's two outs. If I get a fly ball, a ground ball, it doesn't matter. I'm out of the inning. All it takes is one out, regardless of how I get it. I'd rather face Rizzo than Judge. Let's give that a go. Instead, he goes with him again. Not only did he get the game-winning hit, he hit it in the damn bullpen.
Yeah, see, that's one of my biggest concerns leaving this series, is that Dusty Baker's the manager of this team. And I think that's this texture with a really good point, 0830. Saying managers don't win games, but they can cost you games. 2019 Game 7 and 2020 Game 6 proves that. I think that's I really like that text, because a manager's job is to put you in the best position to win. That's all that a manager is supposed to do. You're right. Managers don't win the games. They put their teams in the best position to win those games. In 2019 Game 7, an example the texter used. 2020 Game 6, an example the texter uses. And I believe you can look at Game 4 of this series and Game 1 of this Yankee series. Pitching to Aaron Judge with the game on the line, to me, that's suboptimal. I don't care if Anthony Rizzo has great results in the last 4 years. I don't care that Anthony Rizzo is a better hitter statistically with runners in scoring position than Aaron Judge. I don't care that Seth Martinez loses his best pitch, the slider, with a lefty coming to the box. Would you rather face Judge or Rizzo? Simply that. What can you live with? If you're going to lose the game, what could you live with more? That you walk Judge and face Rizzo, or that you pitch to Judge and you let him hit a walk-off home run?
Especially since he beat you the first time. At least tell me that you mixed it up. Tell me after the first time that he stuck it to you, that the second time you mixed it up and tried something else. But no, you went to the exact same philosophy, and what'd that get you? Another loss. And instead of really celebrating what could have been a sweep in the Bronx, which would have been massive, you're going with a split and going, but you know what? We should have won all four. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. It doesn't feel nearly as good as if you had won 3 of 4 or all 4, and you legit could have done that if you just reversed you're thinking on facing one guy.
Yeah, thinking and then maybe a couple pitches, right? I mean, that you were that close to taking four in the Bronx against the best record in all of baseball. Shows you where the Astros are at, though, and shows you where they might need some help. 8437 says, also, if their excuse for Yordan not playing yesterday was that he has a sore hand, what the heck is he doing out there pinch hitting? Clearly, this is just Dusty was giving him the day off, even though they literally had a day off the next day. Plus, they don't even need to travel. Well, 8437, you have to understand something. Yordan Alvarez desperately needed a day off before his day off.
I looked at the lineup just coming out for that Sunday game, and I was thinking the exact same thing, going, the one guy in the one series against the one team, you don't give him the extra day on top of the day that's coming. There's no reason in the world. The Yankees weren't sitting Judge. They weren't sitting their best players. They knew that they wanted to beat the Astros. You want to beat the Yankees, you have the best hitter in the month of June on the planet, and you're going to sit him while they play their top lineup. I hate that.
Yeah. Like, I can, to defend Dusty here a little bit, to talk out of both sides of my mouth for just a second, like, I understand it's not a bad time to do it with the lefty on the mound, but if you're going to pinch hit and you have the idea that you're going to use Yordan late in the game as a weapon, why don't you use him whenever you use J.J. Mattejevic for Brantley when Brantley had to leave the game? I hope he's all right. I haven't seen any reports on that.
Wouldn't they say something about a shoulder?
Yeah, discomfort.
Front shoulder.
Discomfort.
Front shoulder discomfort.
Discomfort's the scary part.
That could be Tommy John.
I thought... That's not the shoulder. That's the elbow. Get
I'm just kidding.
Here.
It's the Astros. I'm saying anything with discomfort could be a major injury.
Yeah, it is worrisome. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. When we return, Mills withstanding... Who would be the most valuable piece to have a breakout season for the 2022 Houston Texans? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5, Houston. Hello.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, let's eliminate Davis Mills from this conversation.
Astros?
No.
Oh, I thought you were trying to put him in the rotation.
Houston. I bet you he could throw pretty good.
Is that sticking your neck out? Oh, that's what he would be doing.
I bet he wouldn't be that bad. Quarterbacks usually are pitchers whenever growing up and things like that.
You know the texter said about managers can't win you a game or two, but they can lose you like nine? Yeah. Quarterbacks can lose you some games in the starting rotation.
Well, look, I'm not trying to advocate for Davis Mills to be part of the playoff rotation, okay. If I was trying to say which Houston Texan would have the best chance of getting a hitter out, it'd be Davis Mills.
Okay, that.
Now the DJ Reader's not on the team?
Or what's the big kid from Oklahoma State that was a pitcher in college and tried to play pro ball?
Josh Booty.
No, the backup quarterback to Deshaun.
I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name. He was like 27 years old in college.
Yeah, big redhead.
Yeah, I know.
Someone will hit us with it.
Right on the tip of my tongue. I know exactly what you're talking about. Anyways, Mills withstanding, who would be the most valuable piece for the 2022 Houston Texans, assuming that Roger Goodell doesn't take the franchise away from the city because of all the stuff that Tony Busby's alleging? I digress. I'm kidding. Mills withstanding, who would be the most valuable piece to break out this season for the Houston Texans?
Whew, from a value standpoint, right? To me, I would think probably Stingley.
Okay.
Because of the fact that he's playing a very, very valuable position in the NFL these days with the value that receivers have and how the salaries have gone through the roof, and having that big breakout guy is important. If you've got a guy that you can put on an island with them and you can lock them down and you prove that you got the draft right and you took the right guy and he pans out and proves to be the guy that really does something like Diggs did with the Cowboys, where all of a sudden he's close to leading the conference in interceptions and no one wants to throw his way, I think that would have a massive value for this franchise.
Whenever Brendan and I were kicking this around earlier today, there's only two answers that I would even say, okay, that's accurate. That's one that I would be willing to live
with.
Did
I get one of them?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Derek Stingley is on that list. And to me, it comes down to position scarcity and the value of position, right? So cornerback, I think cornerback's a very valuable position nowadays in the NFL. If you're paying receivers $40 million and you're trading first-round draft picks left and right for a receiver that you're going to spend $40 million on, Well, you have to defend that. It's the same thing of why a pass rusher is so important against defending against a quarterback. So that's why those are the two for me. It's corner, it's defensive end. Now, Stingley's the more decorated because he was a higher pick.
Can I go
third.
One other one?
Sure.
Because it kind of plays into what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
But instead of the defensive end, outside linebacker. Because okay. outside linebacker can still put the pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
But he's also one of those guys that can be so disruptive in so many different ways, both in the pass and the run game.
I would argue that not as much in a 4-3 because
true.
The Texans play the four down front.
That's true.
And do they have that outside linebacker? See, to me, it's Sean Grenard. Like, it's Stingley or Grenard. But if Grenard steps in, because I think Grenard, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a double-digit sack guy this year. I think he would have been a double-digit sack guy last year if he stayed healthy. So if he had evolved into a 12, 14 sack kind of guy, all of a sudden you have a top 10 defensive end. You have somebody that you can count on that's going to get to the passer. So for me, those are the two answers. Who's the...
Don't you think they're going to double him more now?
It depends. Like, I think that the Texans are okay on the other side. I don't think they're great. I don't think it's long term. But I think what you have on the other side with Oboe and with Hughes and with Addison, name your other defensive end because they brought in a ton trying to solidify the other end.
Jerry Hughes is long in the tooth.
It's also, he is long in the tooth. I think he's a solid player. I don't expect
he's a great
Jerry,
locker room guy.
You
too.
And I are on the same page yeah. with Jerry Hughes. Like I think Jerry Hughes is going to be on the 53.
Right.
I don't think Jerry Hughes is going to have six sacks.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? I don't think Jerry Hughes is going to play 50% of the snaps. If I'm being completely honest. But who would be the most valuable piece to break out this season? I'll go John Grenard. Blankers is going Stingley. I think those are the two answers. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 4683 says kind of cheating, but Nico Collins having a breakout year would be big. But if he does, that means Mills is probably doing okay. I like what you did there, 4683, though. If you can't use Mills, well, throw in somebody that, because of Mills doing well, is having some good years. See, like, if I'm looking receiver, though, I'm not even sure I want Nico Collins to be the breakout. I think I want John Mechie to be the breakout.
I could go either way, because Mechie's always going to be more your slot guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Collins has the ability, he could do to both, and he can get you the deep ball.
Well, I think Mechie can do both. I think Mechie can do both, but I think Mechie's better suited inside. Right. I want Mechie to be Hunter Renfrow. I mean, I said that the day after he was drafted, and people loved that idea and started talking about it themselves.
Grenard's my answer, too, because I think you want a pass rusher. But I actually think you said there's only two positions that you really took seriously.
Well, no, two players because of where the Texans are, two positions.
Sure, fair enough, but I kind of question why you didn't consider either receiver in the answer. If it's a corner to lock down a receiver, well, you have two young receivers who weren't premium picks necessarily, but both were taken at a spot where you are hopeful that those guys can be meaningful.
But also to that point, the point that I was trying to make when I said it doesn't have to be a defensive end and throw linebacker into it, Christian Harris could be that guy. Because of the fact that Christian Harris, when you look at teams and taking jumps on the defensive side of the football, when they get a draft pick right as a linebacker, mm-hmm. it's very, very feasible that you see guys, the kid that had to retire early from Carolina is one of them, where you get a versatile, athletic linebacker that can, by the way, Brandon Whedon was the backup quarterback
Keuchel.
That was the baseball
Luke.
Player. Luke Kuechly.
Kuechly.
Like Luke.
Dallas Keuchel.
You get like Luke Kuechly type guys. You heard me on Brandon Whedon, right? That was our
Whedon.
Baseball player.
That's right, it was Brandon Whedon.
But you get a Luke Kuechly. You get a guy that could be disruptive both in the run and the pass game.
Yeah.
And they can elevate your
See,
defense.
I don't
That's
think,
why I kind of was thinking Christian Harris,
I don't
maybe.
Think, I don't think Harris is going to be a factor in the pass game, though, at least at getting to the quarterback. I think he's going to be your prototypical D'Amico Ryans, 120-tackle kind of guy, which isn't bad. I mean, if you can sign me up for 120 tackles from your middle linebacker, that's something that you would take. I just give the emphasis to the defensive end and probably the cornerback as well. To Brendan's point about the receiver, I'm anti trading first rounders and then paying $40 million to a receiver. I wouldn't be the one trading for Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams. I would be the one trading mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams. I believe that a quarterback should be elevating the receiving core. Like, if you have a good enough quarterback, if you have a Pat Mahomes, if you have an Aaron Rodgers, if you have a Tom Brady, and Brady did this for years, that you and Peyton Manning did this for years too. Is Reggie Wayne and Marvin Harrison the type of player that they are if they were playing with David Carr? Probably not. I am very much of a believer that if you have a very good quarterback, that you're going to bring up the elevation of your receiving core, and that I don't even need the receivers because Peyton Manning and that type of quarterback are going to bring them up. I want the elite quarterback more than I want the elite receiver, but I can't use quarterback here. 3799, Marco saying, whatever running back. Running back opens up the passing game, helping the QB and the receivers. See, I also think that running backs, especially the kinds of Marlon Mack and the Damian Pierces who get drafted in the middle rounds, I think that they can be dime a dozen.
I was just going to say the exact term and the exact same thing. They are a dime a dozen these days. And the fact that the value of a running back has completely changed over the last several years to where you would think that you got a franchise running back in the draft and you have to pay him as such and you have to nurture him because they don't come around that often and they're so valuable. And then we've seen by multitudes of teams that have gotten running backs in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds that have turned out to be really studs or really above average running backs. And when that contract comes up, they go get another one. The Niners are the latest case. The Packers have done it forever. They continue to do it. There's lots of teams that don't want to pay a Zeke Elliott kind of price tag, but still get the same kind of results productivity-wise.
See, I don't want to bang on Marco too much because I do believe that a running back opens the passing game, which in turn helps the quarterback. I do believe
there's
that.
There's no need. They need one, and it has to provide balance.
I just believe that you can find those guys, right? Just like they found Marlon Mack. They didn't use a premium pick on Damian Pierce. You could go out and find them. 6-0. Oh, yeah. That's the Braden Webb one. Who are the Texans that would be the most valuable piece to break out this season on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Texans Matt says Brevin Jordan. If he could pick any Texan to have the most to have a breakout season, that he would be the most valuable piece. Now tight ends are huge. Tight ends are important in today's NFL.
No, look, the thing is that they're important. Their entire tight end room is garbage. So I would rather see them go outside and get a tight end and try and solve the problem for the long term.
But if your tight end room is garbage, isn't that reason to advocate for one tight end to have a breakout year?
But there's so many, like you were just saying, though, from an impact on the overall team and or that side of the football.
Travis Kelce.
Yeah, but you're not getting – Brevin Jordan ain't going to be Travis
Kelce. We're talking about breakouts. That
wouldn't be just a breakout. That would be a full-blown, like, pandemic. That's how big of a breakout that would have to be.
But this is fantasy land. You get one player to have a breakout season. You get one player to turn into a top five, top ten player at their position.
Okay. I just think that you still got enough offensive weapons that whether you have a breakout from a tight end or not, there's ways that you're going to move the football and be successful. Just like on defense – I'm not going to pick a defensive lineman. I mean, an interior defensive lineman.
You're not going to pick Malik Collins? So how about Kenyon Green?
Could be. I mean, look, again, because that offensive line is valuable as a unit, I think you could take several people on the offensive line and say, look, that could be a massive difference maker for this team. I think the biggest thing is that you're not going to move them around. The fact that all these guys that are fully capable are going to play one position, hopefully one position only, and just focus on it all season long, and as long as they stay healthy, that's going to make your offensive line better. And then, like we talked about, as it relates to the texture and the offensive line, as it relates to running and running the football, they couldn't run the football because the interior-wise, they couldn't block for the running backs last year, even though they didn't have a great running back room to pick from. This year, you've got two different running backs that can run the football. You got youth, you got experience, and you've got a good enough offensive line that should open holes for them that you get the balance you need.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a case for a left guard more than a running back, right? I mean, there's a reason a left guard went 15, and running backs, even ones that we think can turn into 1,000-yard runners, are drafted in the third round. 713-780-ESPN. Eliminate the quarterback. Can't say Davis Mills. Who would be the most valuable piece to break out this season? 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, will the Texans' win total improve? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.